What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Drain Plug Podcast. This episode is sponsored by TBNation.net. Visit TBNation.net for all of your John Boat needs. Dry hatches, EVA foam, lithium batteries, electric outboards, so on and so forth. Visit TBNation.net today, and thank you for TBNet. Wow. Thank you for TB Nation for sponsoring this episode. Real quick, product highlight, some new items that came out. Once again, the shallow water anchors, the Lumars, those things are awesome. I love mine. Have it on my boat. Can't wait to get that quick release bracket in, which is coming soon. But also the Light Skiff Air. That is one of the newer boats that we're carrying. Inflatable raft-like boat. And it's pretty awesome. I've used it. A couple videos coming out soon on that.
You like it so far?
It's awesome.
Really? How long did it take to blow up?
Too long.
Now, you did it with the hand pump that it comes with.
I did. I had to be legit about it, you know.
So you wanted to you wanted the full experience.
Full experience, and I got the full experience.
So do they make an electric pump for it?
That company doesn't, but I'm sure that there is one that you could get
an for aftermarket it. One yeah. somewhere. Okay. So what are we drinking tonight?
Tonight's bourbon review. We're going to be doing this 13th Colony Cask Strength.
Single barrel.
Single barrel cask strength, yep.
This is barrel number 28 and bottle number 76 out of it.
So this bottle does have a 4.5 year age statement. The proof is 129.9, so a little hot.
Ooh,
and heavy.
Ooh, that's hot.
64.5% by volume, 750 milliliters.
All right, so this place is in Georgia, right? This is a local distillery?
Correct. It's in Americus, Georgia, which is pretty much down by nothing, as far as I know.
Far away from here.
It is completely made, barreled there. They have three bottles that you could get your hands on. They have a regular just bourbon. I don't even know. I bought a bottle of it and really liked it.
Really?
But I don't remember the specs on that one. They got a rye that's out that's just like that other one. And then they have this one, which is, I absolutely love this one. And then they have their double oaked, which is like the holy grail of all bourbon right now that you can't get your hands on.
But so, this one's available in stores, right?
This one's available. It's around that $90 price point.
Is this a single barrel?
Single barrel cask strength. And it is, dude, it's so good.
So far, I'm impressed.
What attracted me to this brand or bottle or whatever was the bottle itself.
It's an odd shape.
It's odd. I'm not like a super big fan of it, but you do need to watch their labels. Like, a lot of them look like they have the same color.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this looks, the reason I actually bought this was because I thought it was the double oaked.
Really?
Because of the color of the label.
Now, the double oak's the one that you can only get at the distillery, right?
As of right now, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen them out, just never picked one up, never tried it. I'm glad you did, so now I get to try it here.
I think we should try the rye one at some point.
Yeah. You had your first experience with a finished rye
on
the last podcast, a couple podcasts ago.
Yeah.
So that was good. We're definitely going to do some more rye soon because I do like me some rye.
This one does fringe the nose hairs just a little bit. But
it's definitely heavy on the ethanol. I can definitely smell it. But it has some really good notes coming out of it. It's got a great barrel char note. Almost not wild turkey-ish, but it's got that really strong, yes. Like you can smell that barrel char note that it's got.
I would agree with that, yeah.
I don't get a whole lot of vanilla, but I do get some of those softer notes like the caramel and there's a sweetness there that I get on the nose.
It coats that glass pretty nicely, though.
It does. There's a flavor in there I'm trying to pick up. I'll have to think about it some more while we're sipping them. And talking about tonight or today, I keep saying tonight because we always film these at night, but today on today's podcast, we're going to be talking anything and everything live wells.
Boy, that first one's a little hot.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that'll
cleanse the palate a little bit,
killed everything. Getting ready to go.
So, but we're going to be talking about just not live wells, but plumbing. What size you need, bait tanks, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
You are, in my eyes, the live well master because I know very little about them other than just your bare bones basics.
Right.
So if you got a new person that's coming into fishing and they've never had a boat with a live well before, but they saw it on YouTube or they saw it on Bassmasters, they saw it somewhere and they're like, oh, I got to have a live well.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing that you're going to tell them to, as far as advice or putting a live well on their boat? Like, what do they need to know?
I'd say the first thing is you need to pre-plan that pretty well for the most part.
As far as where you're going to install it.
Where you're going to install it, the plumbing where it's going to be running. If you're going to use that premium kit, you got to think about that cable that you're going to get in it.
Now, when you say premium kit, you're talking about the Flo-Rite premium live well plumbing kit that we sell on the website, yep. Which is kind of your holy grail of live well kits. Yep. It's got everything you need. It's got basically the way it operates, just for people that don't know, is it's got a pump that you mount either in your transom, like as low down as you can possibly get it,
mm-hmm.
or on the side of the boat as low down as you can possibly get it, and it pumps water into the valve, right?
Well,
or does it go straight to the live well?
The beautiful thing about the kit just in general is it operates off of one pump.
Yeah, you don't need two
pumps.
Which
if you try to do it any other way, it's going to be very difficult to do with one pump. You know, they're not always very cheap.
No, the live well pumps get
they
pricey
can be expensive, quick. But that's the downfall of that kit as well, because it's an expensive kit.
Yeah.
Now,
but it has everything you need, and it's the best of the best when it comes to live well kits.
Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, so it's that valve, but that pump doesn't actually suck, so that's why that valve is connected to the pump that needs to be mounted as low as possible into the boat, so that when your boat's in the water, water's already coming up through your plumbing so that the pump can do the rest of its job as far as pushing it into the tank.
So it's a pushing pump only, not a sucking pump.
Correct.
Now, that valve is the key to the whole entire kit. The valve has three different functions on it, if I mm-hmm. remember correctly.
Yep.
You've got your fill, which is basically just pulling water from the back or the side of the boat into the pump and putting it into the live well.
Yeah, that one's called auto.
It's called the auto on the it's got a three-way switch, so you can select between the three.
Right.
So your fill or auto is your first function of that valve. Mm-hmm. And then your second one is your recirculating.
Correct.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm kind of new to this, but the pump is going to be pulling water from the drain of the live well to the pump, and then it's going to pump it back into the live well. So it's just constantly recirculating the same water over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the third function that valve has is the empty function.
Correct.
You turn it over, and all the water is going to drain out of the live well, go to the pump, and that valve's going to block off the part that would normally go to the live well, and it's going to spit it out the side of the boat somewhere.
Yes.
So those are the three main parts of the live well pump, and then the valve, which is the most important thing, because it gives you all three functions. You can fill it, empty it, and you can recirculate water.
Yeah.
The other thing the kit includes is all the plumbing that you need for your overflow.
Listen, I don't really want to stress too much on that kit, because I feel like I'm going to end up kind of venturing away from that kit.
Okay.
The only reason would be because of that cable.
The cable.
But I don't want to stress that too much to everybody out there that's listening as far as, like, selling you guys on that kit, because you have a bunch of different options and different directions you can go with it.
Yeah.
The main thing you need to know is you got to have an intake. You got to have something that's recirculating what's already in there for when you have fish care products in the tank or ice in there or something like that.
Now, fish care products, you mean like conditioning the water, G-juice.
What's that other thing that we got over there? That bottle of
it's like
accelerant
or something. Yeah. And then, those are to help keep the fish alive.
Yeah, it just puts chemicals and stuff into the water. Well, I wouldn't, probably shouldn't say chemicals, but it does put items into the water that de-stress the fish, and also, I guess, I really don't fully understand.
we don't understand how they work, but we do know that they help the fish.
Especially in the summer.
Yes.
But anyways, yeah, so the recirc and then pump out, right? And then if you, so intake, recirc, pump out. On the other side of that, safety wise, you got to have an overflow.
Okay.
Okay. So to make things extremely simple, all of your intake lines should always be that 3/4 inch hose.
Okay.
And then your overflow stuff should be 1 1/8. That is the mathematical equation with an 800 gallon per pump as far as the amount of water that's going to bring into the tank, but also can allow to get out if your pump keeps running.
Okay.
Right. If that tank starts filling up too much, that 1 1/8 has enough of diameter that's larger enough to take out enough water so it doesn't just start filling in the boat.
Okay. So you mentioned the 800 gallon an hour pump. Is that like the bare minimum? Is that like industry standard?
Or that's
is
what
that...
I would do, bare minimum.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds like a lot, but realistically, when you're trying to fill up like an 18 gallon tank,
which is our typical live well size,
it still takes a little while to do that. So if you're going with that like catfish live well tank or
yeah,
something like that,
that's huge.
Dude, you probably really want to consider doing two.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take you, it might take you 20, 30 minutes to fill that tank up.
How long does it take you to fill your, yours is a little bit bigger than 18 gallons. Yours is probably about 20,
yeah,
22.
Mine's probably like, I think mine's in like the 26 range.
How long does it take you to fill it up?
Probably, I'd say at least 10 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe I'm exaggerating that a little bit. I'd say it's every bit of 5 to 10 minutes somewhere in there.
So you got your premium live well kit is generally what we've always recommended for people because it comes with everything that you need. It's pretty simple to install, even for people who've never done a live well
install
before.
That and the other thing that makes that kit invaluable is the quick disconnects.
Yeah, it's the install process of running all the plumbing is super easy.
Yes.
Now, what other options? I know that we have like our own Tiny Boat Nation version of it that has a two pump system. So how does a two pump live well system work?
Basically, one would be for your intake to bring water in.
Mm-hmm.
Your other one I would use as a recirc and a pump out. So okay. that actual pump would get mounted to the tank, and then it'd be recirculating that water in the tank, but also do the red aerator from Flowrite that has the two backsides to it.
Yeah, we'll discuss more about that in a little
but
bit.
That but that same recirc pump could, in theory, drain the tank and shoot it out the side of your boat,
okay,
but also recirc what's already in there.
Just by putting that
that
two-way valve in there.
Yep.
Okay. Now, when you go to plumb a two-pump system like this, is the placement of the intake line as important as it is on like the Flowrite kit where you have to have it as low in the transom as you can possibly get it?
Well, I mean, yeah, you're still going to need, it's still going to be a push pump.
So it's still, you're not going to get a sucking style pump out of that.
No, but in that scenario, you could mount the pump directly to the transom wall, which is pretty common what you see in these older boats, right?
Yeah.
When they come in, there's always that through-hole fitting, and it's connected to a pump.
Yeah.
That was your intake for the live well.
Gotcha. Okay. And then that second pump is the recirculate, but you can also do it as a drain,
out.
Like a pump out, too,
correct,
as well.
Yeah.
Just by using that valve?
Yes.
Okay.
You would have to use that valve.
So the valve that you're talking about is the Flowrite two-way
aerator,
valve. It's called
nozzle,
the aerator nozzle.
Like that, yeah.
And it's red. And the housing of it is white, but when you push it in, it's going to...
Push in is recirc. Pull out is eject.
Eject water out of the boat.
Yeah.
Okay. And it has two plumbing lines on the back of it. You've got one that's going to be coming from your intake,
right,
pump, and then one that's going to be coming from your emptying pump, right? Or what do you call
that
pump?
No, one would just be going back out to the boat.
Okay, so it would come from the drain.
It'd come from the drain into the pump, back out to the recirc side.
Okay.
But then if you pull it, it would just direct it, like it would bring it into that intake side for that valve.
But it wouldn't
but
go
direct
into the
it
tank,
back
it would just
out.
Go back out of,
yeah,
the boat. Okay, right, that makes sense.
Which would negate you from having to use that valve.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So it's just a manual pulling object instead of a whole valve with a lever that runs back and has to be in the exact right position.
Gotcha.
So
Now, the other thing that's in the Flowrite kit that you, if you're going to build your own two-pump system or any other kind of system that you're going to have to think about is the timer. The premium kit comes with a timer so that you can just be full blast on all the time, or you can set it on a timer where it comes on for, what, a minute and then turns off for a minute.
Yeah, and it, if you're doing the two-pump way, I mean, realistically, that pumper, that timer would only need to be on the recirc pump. You know, if you watch your fill pump as you're doing it, or you could get two pumps and, I mean, I guess you could time the fill, but you should probably be watching that either way, you know? Yeah. So then you would just be left with the, which I do like that, that Flowrite timer pump or the timer.
Sorry. The timer itself. It's got a nice little really sticky nice. Back faceplate with 3M adhesive on the back of
Super simple. Everything's right there on that one pad.
Yeah. I will say this as a little bit of a negative towards that particular timer. The only thing I do not like about it is you have to cut a rectangular hole for that timer switch to go into.
Yeah, cutting the hole can be a pain. And also, I've done it backwards before.
You put it on the wrong side?
Yeah, so the, you know, because that button has to be on one side and then the hole on the other. And I had the screen laid up into the side of the boat. Backwards. Which, because when all the stickers are on it, it looks forward, but it was not.
That's something you do have to pay attention to, so that the timer that we're talking about, if you look it up on the website or at Flowrite's website, it's two-sided. So one side of it's got 3M sticky back on it, and then the other side's got like a plastic cover to keep it, because it's acrylic.
Yes.
So you keep it from scratching it, keep it from getting damaged in shipping, but you got to kind of peel that cover off and make sure that when you go to hold it up on your boat that you're holding it in the right direction. Yes. Because if you do those holes backwards, because one's a round hole for the actual timer selector, whether it's minimum or maximum time.
Correct.
And then the other one is the I'll keep wanting to say square, it's rectangle.
Yeah.
The rectangle hole for the switch. And the switch is three-way, so you got off, on, and timer.
Yeah. And that hole's not, it's a pain in the butt to make.
Yeah. Now, if you're going to build your own live well system, however you decide to do it, and you want to add in a timer, there's the Flowrite, which is it seems to be the most popular option. People just like it. It looks good. Once it's installed, I've never heard of one having any issues before, mm-hmm. other than the one guy I know that put 24 volts to it instead of 12 volts and burn it up.
Yeah, that'll do that.
Yes, it will. But there's other live well timers out on the market. I know I've seen some on different boating websites.
The other thing I don't like about the other ones is it's a much larger unit.
Yes.
So, like, it's almost like a big AirPod case that's on the backside of it, and not every boat is going to have that much space for that.
Yeah, because they do take up some room, because the threaded part for the timer switch from minimum to maximum is, man, that thing's like 2.5, 3 inches
it's
long.
It's pretty long.
And if you're going to surface mount this thing, you're going to want that threaded part for the switch to be down inside your boat. Well, then you've also got the pins for the back of the timer switch, which stick out another 2 inches or so. So you end up having to have, you know, 2-3 inches of room on the backside of wherever you're going to mount that timer to make sure you've got enough clearance room, plus your wiring that's got to go to it. So the next question I have is, what's the bare bones budget option for the people that are just getting into it? I just want a live well, cheese ball bucket, and fill it up and put a one of those little bubblers in there. Does that work? Is that safe?
Shoot, dude, I don't know. I've seen some pretty rough plastic tanks that guys have used from, like, you know, we even used to do it, the storage bins from like Home Depot or something.
Yeah, the storage totes.
A lot of those seem to hold up fairly well if you frame them in properly.
Yeah.
They don't seem to be that big of an issue, which personally I would rather have plastic than aluminum tank just in general, but man, it's so hard to find one that looks like those storage bins look 100% like storage bins.
Yeah, you can tell. Well, we have a new one on the website now that is our first ever molded plastic live well.
We do?
Yes, we do. You did not know that?
Since when?
What do you live on? Do you live under a rock?
Dude, ain't no one told me about no plastic live wells.
Oh, hey, Ryan, by the way, we got these new plastic live wells.
Holy crap.
We just started carrying them at the Midwest location. They're for sale on the website. They're pretty cool.
No, I'm about to look these up. I don't believe you.
Now, the only thing that's different between our typical live well tank, which I guess this will kind of flow the conversation into tanks itself since we already kind of brought it up, but our traditional live well tanks have always been aluminum when we did them in our builds, and they're kind of pre-stamped, but they're basically just a five-sided box with no top on it. So the sides are, I would say, not level, but they're flat. There's no flange on it. So what you have to do in order to install it in your boat is you've got to actually frame around the edge of where your live well tank is going to sit. You'll set your live well down inside of that hole where that framing is, and then figure out if you need to cut any of the live well off to bring it up to the correct height. And then what you'll do is you'll run either rivets or screws in from the inside of the live well straight horizontal into that framing, and that's what holds the live well up. And then if you want to kind of mount it up off the floor a little bit so that you can get your plumbing underneath there, then you just need to, you know, put something underneath there to help support the tank. A lot of times we use the pink foam. In your boat, we actually did spray foam just to help insulate it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference in the plastic live well tank that we have on the website now versus the aluminum one that we're used to installing is the plastic one has a, not a top, but it has a lip all the way around the inside edge. It's still going to install the same way, but you're not going to have that full width lid like you would on an aluminum tank.
So some of that's going to be hidden by your sheeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like on an aluminum tank, our aluminum tanks are 30 by 12 by 12. So they're 30 inches long, 12 inches wide, and 12 inches tall. When we make a lid for that tank, the lid is 12 by 30. On the new live well tank, it is actually bigger than the opening.
I was just seeing that, yeah.
Yeah, so, and what that is for is that's structural for the plastic, because the plastic can, you know, kind of move around, and if you don't have something to hold that top rim around, the plastic can kind of bow. So that's why you have that extra molded piece all the way around the rim. But it will still install the same way, just like you would either screws or rivets from the inside, but your lid sizing is going to be different than your actual size of your live well.
Right.
And we've got lids available for that particular plastic live well. So I'm going to actually be the first one of us to cut the top off of one.
Yeah.
I'm going to be building a skiff here soon, and we're going to do a demonstration of how to install the live well non-traditionally in that skiff. And we're going to use that plastic live well and show you how to cut it open, cut the top off of it, resupport it, and then put a plastic lid over the top of it that's going to go in that skiff. It's going to be like a budget skiff build.
Okay.
So we can go do some inshore fishing.
Well, I mean, but here's a whole other thing. Live well tank and bait tank are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a live well tank to keep bait.
No.
If you need a... Bait tanks are circular. They don't have corners or ovals because just no corners is basically the main thing.
Yeah.
Those minnows, if they swim into the corner, they'll get stuck because they're stupid, and then they will die.
Yeah.
So that's why all your bait tanks are always circular, whereas your live wells are always square.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. Like if you're – honestly, I wish I could just use a bait tank because it's smaller. You have, you know – I feel like you can fit that in your boat a little bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, because you could even cut down a five-gallon bucket and use it as a bait tank in your boat.
Put a little aerator in there, and you'd be good to go.
Keep you a cheese ball bucket in there.
Yeah.
So that way you can fill it up. And we've talked about this before. I've yet to do it, and I may do it on the budget skiff build.
You're going to have to.
The bilge pump on a stick that can just kind of like hang off the side of the boat with the hose and just stick it inside the live well so that you can fill the bait tank or the live well up. But one thing I want to mention is that you cannot use a live well as a bait tank for certain types of bait.
Yeah.
There are certain kinds you can, like if you're a cat fisherman and you're fishing with big shad
or brim,
suckers, mudcats, you know, yellow cats and bullheads and stuff like that. Those will do okay in a live well. So you can have a dual purpose there. But if you're going to be fishing with small shiners, minnows, things like that, they cannot have corners in the live well tank, or the you should technically call it a bait tank at that point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't use a bait tank for a live well, because generally, and I'm going to say this very generally, generally they're a lot smaller than a live well tank.
Correct.
And a lot of them are made to be removable so that you can just dump the water out when you get done with it. A lot of them are not plumbed in. Some of them are. But you don't want to go, you know, like if you're going to be going to a bass fishing tournament, you don't want to show up with a bait tank that can only hold like a couple dozen minnows and hope you're going to keep your bass alive all day long in the summer heat.
That's not going to work.
It is not going to work. And
I have some very upset fish in there.
We found through a lot of customer calls and just talking with people and then working on your boat and Nate's boats and a lot of other people's boats, the bigger your live well is, the more water volume it has, mm-hmm. the better off you are in the long run.
Yeah.
We see a lot of people try to take like a little 20-quart cooler, cut the top of it off, and use that as a live well tank.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always work out well because you just don't have a lot of water volume. And unless you want to have that pump just pumping constantly all day long, you fish can foul up that water like, pretty quick.
Dude, a 6-pound bass is like 24 inches long.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's 24 inches of space. You need that fish to be in there comfortably.
Yeah. Have you ever caught a fish that big and put it in a live?
I've seen a few.
In videos? On YouTube?
No, they were in real life. Jeez.
But you're talking about the same token for, like, you know, you got these guys that do catfish tournaments and striper tournaments. Dude, like a 20-pound striper is huge.
Yeah.
It'll take up a 30-inch live well.
I don't even think you put
I don't think
striper
you could fit it. Well, you could fold his tail over to the side. He ain't going to
be
happy
so
about
pissed.
It.
No.
He ain't going to be happy about it.
You kill it just by trying to get it in there.
Yeah. Well, the same thing for, and I know that a crappie's not a big fish by any means, but most of them tournaments are, you know, 7 fish. Do you really want 7 fish swimming around in something the size of a cooler?
Right.
You know, and they're constantly, yeah, I think they're peeing and pooping in that water while they're sitting there floating around. They're taking up all the oxygen.
Yep.
So, in your experience as a tournament fisherman, what have you found or what have you heard or what have you learned that's been the appropriate time to keep water in the tank, take it out, run in your timer, aeration and all that kind of stuff? Like, I don't know a whole lot about it because I'm not really into that stuff. But
you mean like throughout the day?
Yeah, throughout the day, because your tournaments are, what, 8-10 hours?
Yeah, I mean, I don't usually fill it up until we catch one.
Well, duh.
Usually, I thought that's what you meant.
That's usually like right at the end of the tournament, right?
Good Lord.
No, like seriously though, like if you got a live well full of fish,
yeah,
and you know you got like 6-7 more hours worth of fishing to go, how often are you taking all that water and dumping out and putting water in?
Never.
You don't ever put fresh water back in the tank?
I just add ice to it. Keep adding ice. When I say ice, I mean frozen, like
water bottle,
Gatorade bottles, stuff like that. I just keep putting one of those in every hour, half hour, whatever it may be.
So is that, am I talking crazy here? Is that not a thing where people will?
Yeah, you don't want to take it.
You don't empty some of the water out and put fresh water in?
No. Do you know why you wouldn't want to?
I have no clue.
Surface temperature of the water gets a lot hotter throughout the day.
Through the day.
Especially in Georgia. So your cooler temperature water is obviously further down, but you can't get your intake down. Right?
Oh, gotcha.
So really, if you're doing that, all you're doing is replacing your nasty water with more hot
water. Not nasty.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't have as many of the like fish toxins in it, but that's what that hopefully that G juice is for. I mean,
yeah,
I try to keep all that stuff in the tank. So if I throw like 4 or 5 water bottles in there and got that temperature down to lake temp or a little below,
mm-hmm.
and then I drain it all out and then reintake more, I'm still gonna have to put more ice in there.
I'm thinking like fish tank water, you know, like you want to keep it aerated and oxygenated. I didn't know.
Well,
but
that's what the recirculation does,
and that it does help put oxygen back in the water so the fish can
oxygen from recirculation does it aerates the water as it going in,
mm-hmm.
and then if you want to add some fish bubblers in there, that doesn't hurt either.
And I didn't know when I went to the catfish tournament, almost every single one of them guys was running multiple aerators.
Oh, yeah.
But they had huge live wells. I mean, there was one guy that had a cow feeding stock tank on the back deck of his boat.
That thing had to be like 150, 200 gallons. Jeez. But they're also weighing in 80 pounds worth of fish.
Right.
So they had a lot to take care of. And yeah. I honestly don't know if you could put the size live well that you needed into a small John boat like what we build. I mean, 16, 48.
Your boat would have to be the live well.
Yeah, just fill your boat up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some of these guys were weighing in, you know, three fish for 70, 80 pounds. I mean, these fish were, you know, this long. The live well was literally the entire width of the boat.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys, and I saw this, quite a few had them there, but they actually built those aluminum truck toolboxes.
Yeah.
They turned those into live wells because they were the perfect size. That's pretty common.
I think that's a genius idea. That's just a lot of weight, though.
You got to have a boat that can support that kind of weight.
Yeah.
And most of the guys that had them had, you know, big 17-foot express boats or 18-footers, right, pontoon boats. There's a couple of fiberglass, like, center console bay boats there that were running live wells like that. I mean, you got to be able to support that weight. That is a lot of weight.
A lot. Fish are just very sensitive. We know that from just even the hobby of keeping fish, you know? And the more space you can give them, the more comfortable you can make them, the better off you're going to be at the end of the day.
Yes.
One, you don't want to kill them. Two, you get deducted points or whatever if you do come in with dead fish, you know? So
I didn't get a 100% answer from you earlier. So balling on a budget, pimping on pennies, what's the cheapest you can get into a live well? I know you said that the plastic tank. What are you looking at for like a standard off-the-shelf live well pump, just to pump water in?
I mean, you're probably going to be in, what, 100, 120 bucks in just pumps?
Okay.
And then you're going to need hose. You're going to need clamps. You're going to need through-hole fittings.
Hose, great question. Is there a specific live well hose that you should be using, or is there anything that you should not be using?
I don't think so.
I mean, like, because I know there's a bilge pump hose and three-quarter and inch and an eighth.
I wouldn't use bilge pump hose. Bilge pump hose is pretty thin.
It's thin and it's super flexible.
Yeah, I wouldn't use that. I would use something like that. You know, that clear hosing from Home Depot, or
the vinyl.
The black, like that Flo-Rite hose is really nice. It's thick. I would use something thick and a little bit dense.
So that it doesn't flex and eventually get cracked.
Right.
I've never seen a Flo-Rite hose crack.
No. I don't think you ever will.
No. Well,
that thing's like an eighth of an inch thick.
Well, that, and it's also got like a reinforcement inside the hose, too. Yep. It's like it's not metal, is it? It's plastic?
It's like metal and then wrapped with plastic.
So it's a coated metal cording, basically.
And then like fused into the actual hose line.
Yeah, it's some tough stuff.
It's like Kevlar almost.
Yeah, you gotta have a pair of like those PVC pipe cutters to
that's
cut
what
it.
I use, yeah.
And then what is the tool called that you use for those clamps? Is that just like a hose clamp tool where it squeezes it, like almost crimps it?
I have no clue what the name is,
but
I stole it from Matt.
Okay,
actually gave it to me, but yeah, it's. They're called like O-Tech clamps.
Okay.
Ortec clamps, something like that.
And they basically look like two little mandrels on it, and when you squeeze the clamp, it grabs the edges of it and pulls it tight and then crimps it.
Yeah, but it crimps, but it pulls the inside of it.
Yeah.
It's got two basically bands around it.
Okay.
And so when you're pinching the outer band, it's pulling the inner band closer.
Now, you should only use those on your like removable type fittings like Flo-Rite where you got quick disconnects and
that
stuff
is
like that.
A permanent fitting. So
you don't want to do that on just a regular old live well pump going to the side of the tank.
I would just use those little stainless steel, I call them exhaust clamps, but they're not
the
exhaust
hose clamps.
They're
yeah.
Hose clamps, yeah. I would just use those because that way that's going to be what you have to get loose if you have an issue, right?
Yeah.
The quick disconnects, if you have an issue, you're just pulling off.
That's the beauty of that Flo-Rite kit is those quick disconnects. It makes
it's got
it so
its pros and cons. You know, its cons are one, that cable, two, the price.
Yeah.
Other than that, that thing's pretty solid.
The cable is really, in my opinion, just from installing a few of them, it's really boat specific.
Yeah,
you got layout a pretty, specific. You got a pretty like close or a pretty straight run back from your live well pump to wherever you're going to have that valve at.
The better
you,
off.
You're yeah, gonna you be. Don't usually have any issues. It's when you got to make that cable make hard 90 degree turns and you're trying to like get it up underneath stuff and snaking it around dude, all over the place.
It hates 90 degree bends. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah.
It hates it.
If you've never seen one, it's built a lot like a bicycle cable mm-hmm. where you've got a,
your brake lines.
Yeah, it's got a steel cable inside of a housing, and you got to be able to slide it freely mm-hmm. in order for it to work. And it is a pretty stout cable, but at the same time, it can only take so much pressure from being kinked before it's going to want to pop out of that valve, and it's not going to work anymore.
Yep. Yeah, that's the only part of that kit that I don't like.
Yeah.
It's not even that I don't like it. It's just sometimes it works. Sometimes it's just not. It's not going to work with that layout. Like, we got one back there right now. It ain't going to work.
Yeah.
I know it's not going to work, so we're not even going to try because I don't want to waste the time trying to make it work. But.
So, I know you didn't know that we had a plastic live well. Do you know that we sell live well plumbing kits now?
No. Nobody made me aware of any of this.
You need to start, like, coming to more meetings and stuff.
What more meetings? I'm in every meeting.
I mean, we had a meeting about it.
Who did?
Me and Nate.
Well, what the fuck?
He called me. He's like, hey, I got something to live well plumbing. I'm putting it on the website. And I was like, yeah, sure.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't eavesdrop on the conversation.
I forgot to tell you about him.
Yeah, no clue.
But the one that is, we have like an economy version of it, which is basically just like one pump and your plumbing fittings that you need. And then we have a second one that's more of a, it's not a premium kit. It's still budget friendly, but it's two pump system. And it comes with a timer. It's actually a flow rate timer. So it comes with a flow rate timer and all the connections and stuff that you need, plus your bilge. It comes with all your plumbing hoses and everything you need to do a live well install. It's a pretty cool little kit. And it's more budget friendly than the flow rate. And Nate really took his time to go through and make sure that everything was included in that particular kit so that if, you know, people want it, they don't have to go running around looking for hose clamps over dude, here and plumbing hoses say, over here.
Making your own live well kit, that is the worst part of it.
There's a lot of little bits and pieces dude, that you need.
You need some. I think when I was doing my very first one, I went to the hardware store like 19 times.
And what did you build your first one out of? Did you have like PVC pipe or something?
PVC.
How'd that go?
It sucked, dude. That's why I know so much about all this crap, because I couldn't figure it out.
what was so bad about the PVC? In my mind, I was thinking, like, aside from being pretty stiff,
it wasn't.
It should work good.
It wasn't the PVC. It was. I didn't understand the pump and how the pump worked with the water on the outside of the boat and the inside of the boat.
Yeah,
and so that gave me some issues. But the PVC itself wasn't bad. It's just once it's there, it's there.
Yeah, you there know, I know.
The way you gotta do the whole purple stuff around there and
primer, blue.
And stick it all back in there.
That's how I remembered it back from my irrigation days. Primer, blue glue.
Oh man,
yeah. That's one of the reasons of that. Like if I was ever gonna put a live well on a boat, I'd probably use the flow rate kit just because everything's flexible and it's removable.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times, like, when we're building a boat, like, usually the live well plumbing is one of the first things that we do. We go ahead and run it all underneath the framing so that's tucked out of the way. But once we get everything set, we usually end up taking a live well, at least the intake hose going from the pump to the red nozzle.
Mm-hmm.
We end up taking those things out, like, five or six times and putting them back in throughout the build and just gets in the way. If you have a permanently installed live well plumbing, like with PVC or anything like that,
makes it more challenging.
Yeah, it's gonna be in your way. When you gotta paint, you gotta tape it all up.
Mm-hmm.
When you put turf down, you gotta get it out of your way. When you're putting turf in, it's a pain in the butt. When you're running all your wires and stuff,
I didn't even think about that. We do remove it all before we start turfing.
We do. I mean, we put it in and take it out a lot.
Yeah.
The other thing, and this may be an install kind of tip for people, and I want you to explain it more because I see you do it a lot. So traditionally, when we're building a boat, we start our subfloor framing. Wherever we think that the live well is going to wind up, we always run the hose.
Yeah, that goes back to the pre-planning thing.
Yeah, so we have it underneath the subfloor so that when we get done with the subfloor, we kind of have it marked out, and then all you got to do is cut a big hole in the subfloor where the hose is going to be. Now, one thing I noticed that you do is as soon as we get that live well tank installed, you always tape over the drain in the bottom to keep get from getting stuff in that in that hose.
Yeah.
Is that like something you came up with, like for a bad experience or something?
Well, I mean, I think when I first did it, it was just kind of common sense. I think Nate did it, or I caught it from Nate or something, one of those two. But, I mean, you don't want aluminum shavings getting down in there and getting into the fins of that pump, because those fins break easy.
A heartbeat.
Yeah.
They are plastic.
They're plastic, and they're very brittle. Like, yeah. Very brittle. So you talk about running that drain line underneath the subfloor. Mm-hmm. You got to think, you need 2 inches of space underneath that tank for that live well fitting, or for that through hole fitting for your drain.
Okay,
your tank is typically about 12 inches tall, so you're talking 14 inches of height, when most of the time inside these boats you're only doing like a 12 inch deck. And that's not even that you mean to do it only 12 inches tall,
it's just how it
it's just the way it lands out.
Yeah,
it seems like every time it lands out around that 10 to 12 inch range. So if you're doing
especially
that
in flat bottom boats,
right?
They're just not very tall on the sides.
Exactly. So if you need that 2 inches of extra space and you eat that from your tank, there goes 2 inches of depth out of the water that you can hold in that tank.
Yep.
For those fish. So if you put that through hole fitting below your subfloor, run the drain hose down through your subfloor all the way to the transom, you just save yourself 2 inches.
You did. Now, the way that we've done it a couple of different ways, I know that in boats that have really tall ribs in them, we'll actually figure out where the center of the boat is, or just kind of off to one side of center, and we'll use a hole saw to actually drill a hole through the rib so that you can put the hose through there.
Yeah, we've done that many times.
But in some boats that have shorter ribs, sometimes you just have to notch the actual rib itself so that you can get the hose to sit down as close to the floor as possible.
Most of the time, the only boats with ribs that are not as tall are the deep Vs, which means that when you're doing your subfloor anyways, it's going to be like a very shallowed out U.
Yeah.
But you're coming from over here to over here, so you have actually more space above your rib but below your subfloor frame.
Yeah.
So
I'm thinking more of like the flat bottoms and mod Vs and stuff.
Yeah, but most of those flat bottoms have like an inch and a half, 2 inches.
Enough to put a hole in the rib and go straight
most
to the back.
Of them. I haven't been in a scenario where we haven't. So
okay. Now, another, and I hear this phone call a lot, and we've had to explain this to people about airlocking the pump. What is all that about, and what's the best way to go about not getting airlock in the first place?
I'm going to be 100% honest, I don't know. I think it has to do with that Flo-Rite kit. If you have it in a certain setting on the dial, and then when you're backing the boat into the water.
Okay.
So, like, somehow between that transition of the boat coming down at an angle, going in and then coming off your trailer and leveling back out, that somehow water gets caught up into that hose back there.
So you got like a big bubble of air between the pump or in the pump and the hose, the intake hose somewhere.
It's got to be somewhere in there or just in the actual pump head itself.
Yeah.
But usually it's not that big of a deal to worry about. Like, this is the other thing, is I typically see it right the first time you put the boat in the water after the install.
Okay.
And then after that, once you get it out of there, it's like it never happens again. It's kind of weird.
Well, what we typically tell people to do is, like, as soon as you put the boat in the water, go to the very, very back and jump up and down a few times. Yeah. Hopefully dislodge any air.
You just got to rock the boat at that pump's area.
Yeah.
To move that air around a little bit, and hopefully that water coming in will catch it just enough that'll push the air through.
Yeah. Because those pumps, you remember, they're designed to push, not suck. So if there's a air bubble or a space of air between the intake line and the pump, it's probably not going to pull it out on its
own. I mean, I guess the only way you could really combat that is turn your pump on as you're backing your boat in the water.
Oh, right? Yeah. So it's already spinning in the air, and then as soon as water gets to it, it's...
I've never tried that, to be honest with you.
I don't, I mean, I guess I'd have to look it up, but I don't think there's anything wrong with running those pumps dry.
Oh, I wouldn't do it long.
Not long term, yeah. But like for like, you know, a couple seconds.
I'm 3 feet away from the water. Okay, turn it on.
Yeah.
And then back it in.
Or if you got somebody that's in the boat, like you're back in, you're driving the truck and I'm in the back of your, in the boat, then I can just flip it on real quick as you're going into the water.
Yep.
Get it going and then turn it off. So the other thing that I've heard some calls about, and I've heard you tell people, is as far as the maintenance on the valve. It does have like a basically like a little rubber flapper in there, and that's how it diverts water to your intake or to your exit.
Yep.
But that rubber can get lake scum and pond junk and stuff caught up inside of it. Or if you got
crawfish, crabs, fish scales.
Which is another point we'll bring up in a second, is that strainer. But if you can get all kind of crap down inside that valve, and we didn't never have any problems with it personally until people start calling about it, and we learned that it's actually really, really easy to clean. There's 4 Phillips head screws on the side of that pump, or I'm sorry, on the side of that valve that's connected to the pump, and you just pull that side cover off, and you can get in there and you can clean any of that junk out of there. I don't think it really needs to be lubed or anything. I don't know if I would put any kind of silicone or anything.
It looks like there's some type of white grease looking thing in there, but I wouldn't put anything in there because you don't want any of that contaminating the water in your tank.
Exactly. You know? But you do need to keep that flapper clean, and you need to keep the surfaces of the intake and exit of that valve clean where the flapper actually touches it.
Right.
Because if they have any kind of contamination on them, or dirt or junk or fish poop or pond scum whatever,
it hinders that seal.
Yeah, and they will not pump the right way, and you'll have all kind of problems. The other thing that I've heard on quite a few occasions, and I had this happen to me on Joe's boat. When we finished Joe's boat, we took it to the lake, and we couldn't get the live well to empty. It would only fill. There is a certain way, if you're going to use that flow right valve, that the two hoses have to be put on the right way.
Yes.
Do you want to tell people more about that?
What would you call those two ends on the back side of that aerator?
They're like a quick connect. I would call them a nipple almost. Or
okay, let's just call them nipples for the sake of this, right?
I like saying the word nipples too.
Yeah, you got two nipples. One is going to be closer to the tank, and one's going to be further away from the tank.
Yeah.
The one closest to the tank should be connected to the pump side.
The one furthest away from the tank should be the exhaust or the
your,
exit.
Your empty, or empty. Well, what not do you really call it? It'd be your outtake, like so your
pump out.
Your pump out, yeah. Okay. So like, if you're trying to fill up your weigh bag at the end of a tournament and your boat's already on the trailer, you're out of the water. Do you have water in your tank?
You can pull that valve.
Pull that valve. It's going to shoot out the side of the boat.
So well, you can fill your way back.
Yeah, that's the only thing I use it for.
But if you have those two hoses reversed, you ain't getting no water out of the tank. Me and Joe were out on the lake, like, and we could not figure it out.
I've had a lot of people call me and scream at me about that.
Well, I got to be living proof of that.
That's the other thing is if you have an issue with that fluorite premium system at all, it's usually pretty easy to diagnose.
Yeah, they're pretty simple.
Yeah,
they're good kits too because normally, if somebody calls with an issue, as long as it's not an install issue, they're pretty easy to fix.
They're easy to fix, and Flowrite's really good about getting replacements and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, but there's nothing on that entire kit that's difficult to replace, aside from your permanent fittings, like your through-hole fitting in the bottom of the tank for your drain, your through-hole fittings through your boat. Like, I wouldn't want to replace those if I didn't have to, but if you have, you know, a hose that has a problem, it's quick disconnect. You can have that thing out of your boat in like 15 seconds, make you up a new hose and slap it in there. You're good to go.
Just don't do it on the water.
No,
like
don't
seriously,
do it on the water.
That's a hole in your boat.
Yeah.
Just so you know, I had to, if you have to do it very, very, very fast.
Yeah. And the same thing with the pump. If your pump ever has an issue or you burn it out because you let it run all day long dry for some reason,
right,
or you need to replace the valve, they're pretty simple because everything's a quick disconnect. You just quick disconnect everything, pull it out,
and
replace
it
real quick.
The motor to that pump is replaceable too. So.
Yeah, it's got two little buttons on the side of it. You just push them in, and I think it's like counterclutch. Yeah. Yeah. They're like detents, and you push those in, and you pull the motor out, cut your wires, put your new wires on there, new motor, and just screw it in place. It's super, super simple. Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask you about that I don't know a whole lot about other than the one inside the tank is the strainers. I know that you used to run a strainer inside the tank just to keep fish scales and, you know, if they puke up half of a brim or something during the middle of a tournament, it's not plugging up the exhaust line. But I see all, I say exhaust, pump out line. But I see a lot of people running them on the intake line out of the back of the boat. Is that just to keep, like, grass and stuff out of there? Or does it serve some
any
other
lake debris from coming into the tank,
Because that's, like, a direct line to the pump. And like, anything you suck in from
it's
the lake.
It's probably more, well, yeah, you just don't want to suck up anything that's, one, going to hurt your pump, two, clog up your lines, or three, enter your tank when you don't want it in your live well, you know?
So if you do a DIY version of a live well plumbing kit, that's something you probably want to keep in mind is those fittings may be a little bit more expensive for those screw-on strainers or guards,
but
it's well worth it in the long run.
Or you can just get the ones that push on.
Oh, yeah, they have the ones that just kind of push into the hole. Okay. Yep. So what do I think about this 13th Colony? One, it is super strong.
Yeah, I think every time I've had it, I've had like an ice cube or two in there.
Yeah, I see. I'm not an ice cube guy, so
it's a little rough without the ice tubes.
It's not undrinkable. It is still smooth. It's easy to drink. It is just really, really strong.
Yeah, you feel that Georgia heat in it.
It feels like August.
Yeah,
when you drink it, it does have a decent flavor profile. It's nothing like crazy obnoxious.
Yeah.
I do like the barrel char note that it has. It reminds me a lot of like Wild Turkey Rare Breed, kind of that real dark barrel char note. It's got a good oak presence. I don't pick up a whole lot of anything outside your traditional bourbon characteristics, though. It's got a little bit of caramel in it.
Dude,
it's sweet.
It's very
not overly sweet.
Just is what it is,
yeah.
I feel like. You know what I mean?
To me, and I'm not a stag fan.
Don't
of the price.
Don't even.
But two, because of the proof. I don't like the high proof stuff. Is like an everyday stag kind of drink to me. It's got that same traditional bourbon profile, but it's just so hot.
You haven't had stag in a while, then.
I've never been a fan of it. Every time I've tried it, I've just been like, meh, it's okay. It's just hot. But that's me. Everybody's palate's different. Some people can take the high-octane stuff.
Stag has way more flavor than this.
I agree, it does.
Way more.
But it doesn't have the flavors that I prefer in bourbon.
I could see that.
And everything that freaking Buffalo Trace makes has this weird grape candy note that I'm not a fan of. I'm one of those people that like a little bit more oak than most. So they're more lingering on that sweeter side and the fruitier side of bourbon.
Yeah.
And this is, honestly, if this wasn't 129 proof?
Yeah. Yeah.
If this wasn't 129 proof, if this was more like
like 107 or something.
I think even 110, 115, this would be a jam up bottle. I think 129 is just, for me personally, is kind of out of my wheelhouse. It's drinkable. It's not bad. It's got a good flavor. But the proof,
I like it. I don't think I would ever spend $90 on it ever again.
Oh, it was $90?
Yeah, and it was one per customer.
4 years old?
Yeah, but that's the thing, dude. That's Georgia. I mean,
they age differently in different climates.
If you look at the Texas stuff, it is dark as crap, and it's barely aged either.
I haven't tried any Texas stuff yet, and I want to.
Mm.
I've been meaning to.
There was that one Garrison Brothers that was freaking amazing.
The one with the silver top?
Silver top one. That's all I remember about it, was it had the silver top.
I might have to grab one next time I see him. I know a store that has a store pick of that.
Yeah, Turtle Creek.
Yeah, I was about to say, Turtle Creek's got a store pick of
that. That's where I tried
it.
I tried their store pick of it.
It was good.
It's amazing.
I'm going to have to try it. I've watched some videos and stuff on Texas bourbon and the differences and how quickly they age it there. I don't know. I've never tried it.
I've heard people say that it tastes a lot like leather, but I don't get any leather out of this one.
You know, in comparison, there's another distillery here in Georgia called Old Fourth Distillery there in Atlanta. Most of their stuff is kind of like them, where it's aged for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, not a whole lot.
Right.
The way that the ethanol and the proof hits the back of my throat is just like that Old Fourth Distillery. It's got that, like, it's a very stingy heat.
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something I can compare it to.
It's almost, you just feel like the barrel never got cooled down. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was just
still really warm
on the charcoals for like 6 years, you know?
I like it, but on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to have to go with like a, like 5.5, maybe a 6 at the most. And a lot of that is because of the price.
You put ice in it, though, it makes it like an 8.
Well, if you put that bottle at, you know, like 45, 50 bucks, then, yeah, it's a solid 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But at that price, I'm just not – I can get better bourbon that's a lot more drinkable for 90 bucks.
No, I totally agree. I wouldn't – like I said, I don't think I'd ever buy it again for 90. But it is a nice – I don't know. I like it.
It's something different. I like trying – and that's the whole reason that we're doing this. We're, like, trying different stuff. You know, I brought some stuff in for you to try, and you're bringing stuff in for me to try. We both have different palates, and a lot of people out there have different palates. Yeah. You know, not everybody's going to like the same kind of stuff. Yeah,
you're definitely more Wild Turkey, dude. I'm more Wild Buffalo Turkey Taste guy.
Fan, man. Oh, yeah. Fanboy.
I just can't do it.
I've been on a Russell's kick lately.
That's good. Yeah. I'll agree with you on the Russell's for sure. Yeah.
I have been on. I got a couple store picks and some single barrels.
If anyone knows where 15 years at.
Yeah, somebody's looking for one.
A lot of people are looking for one.
Yeah, well, a lot of. Well, I keep seeing them pop up on like the bourbon Facebook groups where people are like, oh, look what I got today for, you know, $129.
Is this supposed to be any good?
Yeah. I'm like, dude, there ain't no way you paid that for that. I did go in one store the other day. I don't know if I told you about it, but they had one of the Wild Turkey Master Keeps from this year. That's it's a pretty high-aged rye, and it's supposedly phenomenal. But it's expensive. It's like $300-something a bottle.
No.
MSRP.
No.
And I saw one at a store, and I was like, I'm just curious how much I want for that. And they were like, it was something like over 400 bucks. And I was like, see you later.
Yeah.
Have a nice day.
Honestly, 400 for an MSRP of 300 is not bad. That's not a bad market.
No, but still, it's ridiculous considering it's the same mash bill as everything else that Wild Turkey makes. I get it that it's limited release. They only do it once a year. They'll never make it again, but it's not that freaking special.
You just missed it, too.
I know.
I think that's going to wrap it up for us tonight, guys. If you have any comments or questions, please leave them down in the comment section down below. Please rate the podcast a 5-star on any of the podcast platforms that you may be listening to this on. Give us some feedback, too. Give us some topics. Give us something to talk about. Maybe we can have a call in one day where you guys call into the.
Yeah, we can do that. And if you don't want to do that, you just want to offer us a suggestion of what you want to hear us talk about or something specific that you're interested in, you feel free to call up here to the shop. Our phone number's on like all over the freaking place. We're on Google.
Yeah.
Or you can send an email, support@tbnation.net, and we'll get that email. And
we should start putting our phone number in the bathrooms at marinas.
I think we make some people mad, but we should. For a good time, call 404-720-3975. For a good time on a boat. Oh, goodness.
God. All right, guys. We appreciate y'all listening, and we'll catch up with y'all next time.
And so, don't forget.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget your drain plug.
I would have drowned.
Don't forget your drain plug.
See you guys.
See ya.